v. Anglin. Mr. Punjabi. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Punjabi.
It's all right, Your Honor. May it please the court. Appellants, we represent the appellants in this case, Orencio Serrano and Paul Villanueva. The appellants have argued that they were denied the benefit of their plea bargains when Illinois imposed three-year terms of mandatory supervised release, or what I'll refer to as MSR, to which neither petitioner actually agreed to in exchange for their guilty pleas. Starting with the initiation of this litigation in state post-conviction proceedings, throughout the state appellate proceedings and in federal district court, their claim has always remained the same, that neither of them agreed to serve a term of MSR and that the imposition of MSR breached their plea agreements and denied them the benefit of their bargains.
At the Rule 11 conference before sentencing, was there attention called to the fact that there was a mandatory period of post
Of MSR?
Yeah.
Well, the
next question is capable of a simple yes or no answer. Was there a discussion of that in the Rule 11 discussion?
No, not according to the petitioner's sworn allegations.
It's not on the record? The record does not show that they were informed that that was part of the sentence?
What the record shows in Mr. Serrano's case is that he was informed that a period of MSR could apply within the range of sentences that could apply to him. He was never the three-year term of MSR was never mentioned anywhere in his plea. That was Serrano's case. In Villanueva's case, he was told that a three-year term of MSR would be a possible penalty, just like the range of 20 to 60 years.
Well, now, that's not what he said. There's no just like.
Well, what he said was.
Say exactly what he said, not a paraphrase.
You know, I'm not sure if I had the exact language before me. It was that a 20 to 60 year. A charge of murder carries with it a possible penalty of a range of 20 to 60 years in prison and a term of mandatory supervised release. I believe that was pretty close to the language.
He said it is subject to a possible penalty of incarceration in the penitentiary for a determinate period of time between 6 and 30 years, a fine up to $25,000 or both, and it's also subject to what's called mandatory supervised release for a period after your release from the penitentiary.
Correct.
So he knew about the mandatory.
Sorry?
He knew about the mandatory quality of the following.
Okay, so there's two things. In Serrano's case, he didn't know that it was 3 years.
If he thought that he had a plea deal with the government that excluded mandatory release, why didn't his lawyer say so to the judge?
Because
you're not charging ineffective assistance, which means that the lawyer's blunders, if that's what it is, are attributed to the defendant. Yeah, he said subject to a possible. He said it twice. Subject to a possible penalty of incarceration and mandatory supervised release for a period.
This was in the context of the, you know, he was in, they were in, so for example, Villanueva was informed that 60 years was also a possible penalty. That didn't make it a term of the plea bargain. He was told
The point is saying subject to mandatory supervised release. Now, according to your position is that the plea agreement excluded mandatory release. So why didn't the lawyer say to the judge, can't have mandatory release here because the government has agreed that that's not going to be part of the punishment.
Because they were affirmatively promised this by the
prosecutor. No, but if the judge missed it, right? If the judge didn't realize that was the deal, why didn't the lawyer remind the judge? No mandatory release, that's part of the plea bargain.
Because
the lawyer's standing right there.
When the judge announced the terms of the plea bargain, he didn't say mandatory supervised release.
When he says the penalty to which the defendant would be subject, he mentions mandatory release. So why doesn't the lawyer jump in and say, no, imprisonment, yes, but not mandatory release? The government has agreed, no mandatory release.
Sure, because at that point in the proceedings, the judge was just going through the entire range of penalties that can apply.
No, but it can't apply to him if you're right about the terms of the oral plea agreement. Don't you understand that the lawyer was making a major blunder? He was overlooking a term of the plea agreement?
But at that point, the court was not going through the specific terms of the individual plea agreement that applied.
He was telling the defendant what the possibilities were. The possibilities, you know, the 20 to 60 years plus mandatory release. And the lawyer should have said, no, mandatory release is not on the table.
Well, and perhaps...
It kind of deprives the word mandatory of its normal meaning.
Sure. The word mandatory is in there, but it's in the same sentence being characterized as a possible penalty.
It doesn't say 3 years. It just says mandatory.
It just says, in Serrano's case, he just said mandatory.
Gotcha.
But I think at a minimum, when you characterize something, the supervised release term, as simultaneously mandatory and in the same sentence call it a possible penalty,
right,
that
that's
creates
you have a lawyer
an
there.
Ambiguity.
You have a lawyer there.
These plea agreements are to be... This court has held that these plea agreements are to be interpreted according to ordinary...
The lawyer's standing there. You're saying that... And Judge Bauer was underscoring, you know, you've got the word mandatory there. Now, earlier in the sentence, you have possible. So you have attention there. So why doesn't the lawyer clarify that with the judge?
Perhaps the lawyer should have
clarified
it.
What do you mean perhaps he should have?
Clarified.
Of course he should.
The lawyer should have clarified it. But these plea agreements are to be interpreted according to ordinary contract principles. So, to the extent that there was an ambiguity on the record, that burden of that ambiguity should not fall on the defendant. Villanueva and Serrano alleged that their understanding of these plea agreements was that MSR did not apply. Serrano alleged he agreed to serve 14 years and nothing more, and would not have agreed to serve 17 years. Villanueva alleged he agreed to serve 25 years and specifically rejected an offer of 28 years. Their understanding is that they were affirmatively alleged the specific term of years that did not include MSR. And this falls, I think, under this court's precedent in Baker v. Finkbeiner. I think Baker v. Finkbeiner would control here. The line of precedent this court has decided in Baker, of course, holds that where the imposition of the MSR period results in a sentence that is greater than the agreed-upon sentence, the defendant is denied the benefit of their plea bargain. So petitioners are making the same claim here.
Ignoring the role of the lawyer here.
Ms. Punjabi, is there anything in the record, explicitly or implicitly, where the dialogue would show that there was the agreement, the plea agreement, would exclude the mandatory when it's presented to the court? Is there anything to suggest in the record that any aspect of the mandatory part of the sentence was not to be included?
I think the key part that would show what you're pointing to or what you're asking about is that when the judge handed down the sentence, they said, here's the sentence. In Villanueva's case, he said, here is the, pursuant to the conference and the agreement arrived at between the parties, I'm imposing a sentence of 25 years. At that point, nothing had been said about mandatory supervised release. It was not in his written sentencing order. The same thing with, of course, with Serrano. When the sentence came down, when the judge said, here are the terms of your plea, it was 14 years, nothing more. And again, this was not in the written sentence order.
Why didn't the lawyer say something or file a, you know, motion to reconsider or a modification?
The lawyers maybe should have.
Pardon?
But maybe the lawyers should have interjected. But it was also on the prosecutor to interject too, right? And say this is not the agreement, judge. And the prosecutor didn't do that either.
Same interpretation of the plea agreement.
Now, I would just like to say a word or two, if I may, about why there was no adjudication on the merits, if the court is interested. The state appellate court denied relief because it concluded when Illinois' Morris decision barred the retroactive application of People v. Whitfield, this also operated to bar the application of the Santabella benefit of the bargain rule itself to convictions finalized before Whitfield's 2005 issuance. That this was not an adjudication on the merits is supported by the express language of the opinions, which state that both state court opinions state that because Whitfield relied on Santabella, reliance on Santabella doesn't avoid the effect of the Morris retroactivity bar. So that was the court's express rationale. There have also been dozens of cases where the state court has issued similar language to deny these. In two of these cases, People v. Curry and People v. Pickett, which we cited in our brief, the state appellate court even says that following Santabella would require relief, but that they would nevertheless be denying relief based on the Morris retroactivity bar. This shows that the Illinois appellate court has been interpreting Morris as requiring it to withhold application of the Santabella benefit of the bargain rule.
He was sentenced in 2002, is that correct?
Serrano was sentenced in 2002, and Villanueva was sentenced in May of 2004.
And now, of course, there's no evidence of what this oral plea agreement was.
We only have evidence that, yes, we only have what's on the record.
Evidence is there?
We only have when the judge ratified the agreement and pronounced the terms on the record. And the judge pronounced the terms as 25 years in Villanueva's case and 14 years in Serrano's case.
But then he attached mandatory...
Prior to that, he said, here are the possible sentences that apply to these offenses.
No, we know about that. Where is the actual sentence that includes mandatory release? Is there a sentence? I don't think the sentence.
It's not there anywhere.
The prison system tacked it on, let him know that he had 3 years mandatory.
No one ever let them know. In Villanueva's case,
enough to file a suit?
In Villanueva's case, he found out through another inmate, and in Serrano's case, he found out through a prison counselor. They were never informed of this.
Did his lawyer testify? Do you have evidence from the lawyer what the agreement was?
No, there's no evidence.
The agreement is on the record.
The agreement, Illinois requires these agreements to be on the record, and the state, the court pronounced the terms of the agreement. They didn't include MSR.
There is no written agreement.
I'm sorry?
There's no written agreement.
There's no written agreement, but the trial court is required to pronounce the terms of the record and ratify them on the record.
Who described the agreement?
By the lawyer.
Who described the plea agreement to the judge?
It's not clear from the record, but it's clear that there was an agreement between the parties.
Did somebody tell the judge what the agreement was?
One of them presumably did, because the judge said...
Presumably did?
Is the record silent on the subject?
No, what the record says is in Villanueva's case, the record says, pursuant to this conference and the agreement arrived at between the parties, here's the sentence I'm going to be imposing. And in Serrano's case, there was also settlement discussions, and at some point the judge, when he was pronouncing the terms of the sentence and of the agreement, he couldn't remember what the sentence was, so he asked the prosecutor, state what was that again? What was the agreement? So it was clearly an agreement between the two parties.
And what did the prosecutor say?
The prosecutor said 1 year. Didn't say anything about MSR.
Ms. Punjabi,
1 year on the possession charge.
Ms. Punjabi, below, before Judges Dara and Gottschall, was there any attempt to locate the defense counsel? By way of presenting an affidavit?
I don't believe so.
So no one in representing these two has ever sought to amplify what occurred by getting the defense counsel, if available? I don't know.
Well, because prior to that, I see that I've run out of time, Your Honor.
Let's answer his question. What do you think?
Prior to that...
I think we ask questions when the red light is about to flash so that we... We're sure not to get an answer.
Of course not, Your Honor. Prior to that, under Whitfield, the Whitfield rule was that you could prove these claims just off the face of the record because Illinois requires these terms to be, you know, requires the judges to place the terms on the record.
Well, I understand that.
And that's why no one made the attempt to find any off-the-record evidence.
Well,
because prior to that, when relying on Whitfield, you could prove this just off the face of the record.
Yeah, but before a district judge in a habeas, you could have, that could have been amplified.
That's true. No, that did not take place.
Isn't what happened that the agreement was on years, and that's what they cared about, and they didn't discuss mandatory release?
The agreement was for an affirmative number of years.
There's no evidence that there were, that the agreement covered mandatory release. Zero.
There's no evidence that the agreement included mandatory supervised release.
That's
ridiculous. If they agree on one thing, that doesn't mean that they have agreed that no other sanction can be imposed.
Well, but
Illinois law... The government says, all right, 25 years is enough. And then... Defendant says, great, 25 years. They don't discuss mandatory release. It's automatic, so it gets attached.
I understand
if
your point, Your
Honor.
If
there really is some contrary agreement, presumably the lawyer would pop up and say, yeah, we excluded mandatory release.
I understand your point, but...
Evidence they ever discussed mandatory release.
If I may respond.
Zero evidence they any ever discussed, and very badly handled, very poor evidence collection. Not even talking to the lawyer who negotiated this plea agreement?
Years later,
you come up and you had nothing?
If I may respond to your point about that they were not promised, explicitly promised an MSR-free sentence, and that MSR automatically attaches by way of statute, that's true. That's absolutely true. But that doesn't make it a part of the plea bargain. In Baker and in Miller and in this court's line of cases...
It's not part of the plea bargain. They never discussed it.
Well, that's the point, right? That the MSR is not a part of the plea bargain.
Go to the defendant and say, all right, let 25 years, and it will tell the judge 25 years. That doesn't mean the government has agreed to drop anything else that's part of the sentencing.
But Illinois views mandatory supervised release as part of the same sentence the prison sentence. It effectively lengthens the sentence. And this court in Baker found that there are onerous burdens on a...
Of course there are, but there's no agreement about mandatory release in this case. No agreement, never a mention as far as we know. It's never mentioned.
Were there any other questions?
There'll never be another oral agreement to oral plea agreement. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Punjabi. Ms. Rayburn?
Morning, Your Honors. Erica Seaburn.
Mr. Cassidy, were you going to...
You reserved some time for rebuttal.
Okay, that's fine. I'm sorry.
Erica Seaburn from the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondents. I'll begin by addressing the Santabello question of the terms of the plea bargain. Here there is no evidence that a lack of an MSR term was actually part of the bargain. Silence does not equal a promise. So the fact that there's no evidence...
Well, if it isn't there, if the government is not asking for telling him that that's what you're going to get, why isn't that a violation of the plea bargain when he does get it?
Well, Your Honor, there's no evidence to indicate that this was not discussed.
No, the question I asked was fairly simple. It had nothing to do with the record or in this case. I said, if there's the agreement that the government says they're going to ask the judge to give does not include the mandatory release section, why is it not part of the bargain then?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a question of, did the prosecutor say to the defendant, I am going to ask for a sentence that does not include mandatory release?
If the sentence, and this is what I emphasized before, the word is mandatory. If
yes.
It is a mandatory part of the sentence, should the defendant not know that it is a mandatory part of the sentence before he enters a plea of guilty?
Yes, Your Honor, the defendant should know before he pleads
guilty
what the term
is. Did he know in this case?
Yes, our argument is that he did know based on the trial court's admonishments. This is the issue.
Well, you're relying entirely on what the judge said at the time before. When he doesn't say the number, he just says there's a mandatory release period.
Well, for Mr. Serrano, he said that there was a mandatory supervised release period without specifying the number of years.
Yes.
I believe for Mr. Villanueva, he did specify that it would be a certain period of years.
What certain period did he say?
I believe it is 3.
What? He said 3?
I believe so for Mr. Villanueva. That's it, page 28 of our appendix. I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, so he knew he was going to get the 3 years.
Right. This is the question that the Illinois Supreme Court is addressing in Whitfield. They're talking about how do we make sure that defendants know what it is that they're pleading guilty to, and the Illinois courts chose to place that responsibility on the trial court as part of its
requirements. Doesn't Illinois have a mandatory requirement that the plea agreement be reduced to writing?
No, it doesn't.
Boy, it ought to.
It would certainly make cases like this a lot easier.
Just to make life simpler.
It would be a lot simpler.
I was an Illinois prosecutor for a great number of years, and I was there when we didn't have any plea agreement before Santabella, when you shook hands and said, that's the end of that. But when we went to the plea agreement, the record would be very explicit. This is exactly what was said.
Yes.
And both parties and the defendant had to agree to it. Don't do that anymore?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that's, you know, a county-by-county policy. I've read some files where there are written plea agreements, and that is very helpful, and often they are explicitly signed by the defendant, and
you
know exactly what
it is. You're from the Attorney General's office with all 102 counties to worry about. And how about making a suggestion that they put all these things in writing in hoc verba so we know exactly what they're talking about?
I have suggested it. They don't always listen to me.
Oh, dear. That's right.
I agree. It would
There's none so deaf as those who will not hear.
It would be a lot simpler. And I think the Illinois Supreme Court is addressing this issue both in Whitfield and in Morris. You can see that they're trying to grapple with this problem of not knowing exactly what's going on behind the scenes and encouraging trial judges to be very explicit on the record about this. But in some cases, such as this one, the record is silent as to whether or not MSR was ever discussed. And here the defendants are trying to imply a bargain that there wasn't going to be MSR out of silence on this issue. And that simply cannot make a Santabello claim, particularly under AEDPA's deferential standard. Counsel briefly mentioned the question of whether or not there was a determination on the merits. And as to that, I would just say that the Supreme Court's recent decision in Johnson v. Williams emphasizes that courts are to presume, it's a rebuttable presumption, but it is a presumption, that state courts have addressed these issues on the merits, and that presumption can only be rebutted in unusual circumstances. The petitioners simply haven't met that burden here. If the courts do not have any other questions at this time, we would ask the court to affirm the judgments of both district courts.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Saber. Mr. Cassidy?
Thank you, Your Honors. As to the adjudication of the merits, I think if this case doesn't rebut that presumption, no case ever will. As to the merits, Your Honor, you're correct that the word mandatory suggests that this is mandatory. Your Honor should know that it's not. The state, on two occasions that I know of, has bargained it away.
But not in this case.
They could bargain
away. No evidence. Zero evidence. They bargained it away.
The mandatory is part of the sentencing procedure passed by the legislature.
The state has bargained it away in People v. Hildenstein. That is 2012, just last year.
They can nollypross if they want.
No.
Give it the whole thing. But
Your Honor,
they can bargain away the mandatory release.
A defendant made this claim, and they answered the petition.
There's no evidence that they did that.
Well, I just want to say that it's not mandatory.
Yeah.
Please, it's not mandatory. And what's the evidence that it wasn't there? Because in Illinois, I'm not sure what it's like in federal court, but in Illinois, MSR is part of the custodial sentence to IDOC. So when you agree to a 14-year sentence in Illinois, that's a 14-year sentence. I mean, maybe in other jurisdictions, MSR is a different term. In Illinois, Holly v. Montez, it's part of the sentence.
Precisely.
So you agree to a 14-year sentence, you get 14 years.
So you're arguing for the government?
I'm arguing for a 14-year sentence, Your Honor. My client's sentence is almost up.
The point is, what's the evidence?
The evidence is a sworn allegation, Your Honor. We have a sworn allegation.
Would you please? What is the evidence?
I'm sorry, I'm being disrespectful.
That's the second time you're interrupting.
I apologize.
And it's the third time. What is the evidence that the defendant was represented, bargained for no mandatory release?
The evidence is he bargained for 14 years, and he's been given 17. That's the evidence, Your Honor.
Wait, you've lost me.
He bargained for 14 years. That's his sworn allegation. That's
But how do we know they didn't? How do we know he wasn't just bargaining over the term and not over mandatory release? What's the evidence of that?
Well, Your Honor, he was never given an opportunity to fully prove that. Because my client
won. How about deposing the lawyer and find out what the lawyer? Where's the lawyer? Is he alive?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
What kind of collateral case is this when no effort is made to present evidence?
Well, I would say that a sworn allegation is some evidence. I agree. It's not.
I thought his allegation was very weak, that he seemed to remember maybe 10 years ago. It wasn't definite.
Well, no, I believe his allegation was that I would not have pled guilty had I known that I wasn't getting 14 years.
Ms. Cassie, if I could return to a comment you made just a few moments ago about mandatory is not mandatory in Illinois because either is placed specifically in the plea agreement, and or not. Now, you're with the state appellate defender.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there case law in either the intermediate appellate court or the Supreme Court that suggests that what you have represented that it's really has to be mentioned in a plea agreement or otherwise it's presumed not to attach?
Well, that is the Whitfield case. We won under Whitfield.
So it must be listed as, and if it's not.
I apologize.
No, that's right.
Yeah, when the imposition of the agreement is ratified, so when the judge imposes sentence, they have to impose it or it's not part of the agreement. Now, earlier, for the Boykin admonishments, they have to rattle off a list of things. But then for the Santabello part of the Rule 402,
yeah.
It's different. So,
Is there any case in Illinois where a mandatory program of continuous was imposed and challenged and found that because it wasn't in the plea agreement, it didn't apply?
Well, that is Whitfield, Your Honor.
That's what it says?
And cases relying on Baker v. Finkbeiner, Dudley from the 90s, and Whitfield cites a whole string of cases.
You certainly have a case like that, just you don't have any evidence.
Well, we would welcome the opportunity.
Well, failure to depose the lawyer, I think, is just fatal. He is the obvious person to testify about the terms of this oral plea agreement. You make no effort to depose him, which I do not begin to understand, and then you have no case. You tell me why he wasn't deposed.
Yeah, we didn't depose him because in Illinois.
Who represented the parties below?
Oh, at district court. I filed an amended petition on his behalf.
So the state appellate defender conducted the habeas defense?
Filed a petition. We filed an amended one primarily on AEDPA.
So it was no attempt to contact the state's attorney?
No, we asked for an evidentiary hearing. I believe.
Yes.
But this case was dismissed on the state's motion to dismiss. We never got to an answer. Frankly, I wanted to see what the state would answer. And maybe there would be a factual dispute that we could have worked out. And maybe we would lose.
There you are.
But maybe not. When
you asked for the hearing, Mr. Cassie, was a specific request so that you could establish through the affidavits of counsel, if available?
I don't believe we made that specific request. I think we just made a general request for hearing.
You seem to understand the importance of hearing from the lawyer as to what the plea agreement was.
If I was doing this again, I absolutely I see your point, Your Honor. I'm not saying you're wrong about that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And you were, you're the state appellate defender, and Ms. Punjabi, were you appointed?
You're appointed this court, though.
Yes. Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of that. We thank all counsel.